In this talk, I'm going to talk about what's the meaning of doing model-based testing, and in particular, what's Spec Explorer about. Spec Explorer is a model-based testing tool. So first of all, how many of you have ever used model-based testing as an approach for testing your systems? One, two, three. Thanks, Mike. Okay. So let's start. What I would like you to get after this talk is to understand what's the meaning of doing model-based testing as a concept, and in particular how this works in Spec Explorer. So let me start with like a very high-level concept of model-based testing. So let's say that you have a system, right? So you start from your requirements, or at least that's the way it should be, right? So given your requirements, what you're trying to build out of that is a model. And this is one of the key points that model-based testing introduces. You build a model that describes the behavior of your system. And behavior, of course, not in a complete way. What you are really interested about is in the testing behavior of your system. You want to test some specific features, and that's what your model is going to be about. So after you build your model, one of the nice things is that usually you already get feedback from your requirements. So even though you haven't really generated any test cases at all, at this point, maybe you realize that there's something going wrong from your requirements. Perhaps something is subspecified, or you find some contradictions, or you find lack of context. So by formalizing the requirements into a model, and this is a formal model, you write code. I'm going to show this later. You already get some feedback, and this is early feedback, which is good. So the next step, and this is where model-based testing really pays off, is that given a model, you can generate test cases automatically. So you formalize the behavior of your system, and then you push a button and say, okay, give me test cases for this. So of course, the test cases are input sequences. Those are the sequences that drive your implementation, right? And when you execute these cases, you get outputs that you compare against your oracle. So your model is acting as the oracle of your test cases, right? So the inputs that your test cases represent drive implementation, and you observe the behavior of the implementation through the expected outputs. So that gives you a verdict, right? You have a test case, it can either fail or pass. So of course, those test cases give you a feedback on your implementation, right? That's the main point of testing. You get, well, my implementation is doing right or is doing wrong. But of course, it can also give you feedback on the model, since you went through this formalizing process of building a model. Well, that's another piece of code, right? It can have bugs. So you may have bugs there. And it also, of course, gives you feedback on the requirements. The requirements may be wrong. Maybe when you run a test case and you found that the behavior is not what you were expecting, you say, oh, well, really, my requirements were wrong. It's not that I did anything wrong in my implementation. So this is the whole idea of model-based testing. And of course, the main key point is this part where you generate test cases out of the model. If you do traditional test cases, well, this looks similar, but this part is not here. You don't formalize the model, and the test cases that you write are manually written, right? Okay, so let me show you a very simple demo on about how Spec Explorer works, and I'm gonna use. Oops, I kicked something. So I'm going to use as an example this very, very simple system, a stopwatch. So if you never heard of a stopwatch, that means that you're probably young enough, right? A stopwatch is something that people use before smartphones, and it's a very, very simple thing that just gives you the date and the time, or a timer function, right? So this stopwatch has two modes. You can actually show date and time or a timer, right? And you have three buttons, right? One that is the mode button, and you can push that button and change from daytime to timer. And then it has two other buttons that only work when you are showing the timer. One starts and stops the timer, and the other freezes the timer while it's running. And if you got it again, it laps. That is, you can either freeze the time or touch it again and you reset the timer, and you reset it to zero. So what we want to test here is the behavior of these three buttons in terms of if we are displaying the time or not and how that looks like. The rest of the stopwatch is abstracted out. We don't care about that. So our behavior model is gonna be concerned about this very simple functionality. So let me switch to Spec Explorer to show you how this looks like. So Spec Explorer ships as a Visual Studio Power tool. So it's free, you can just download it and install it. And so I have this stopwatch project loaded here. So this project has basically three things. One thing is the model, this formal model of the behavior of the system. It has, of course, the implementation, that is the stopwatch. And it has another third piece, which is what's called a chord file. And that is how we're going to coordinate these two pieces. So how we're going to drive this test case generation. So let's take first a quick look at this chord file. And here what is going on is we are declaring all the actions of my system. So I have the mode button that represents that button is being pushed. The same for start stop. The same for reset lap. So these three actions represent the three buttons that I have. And then the only observable of my system, and again, this is what I'm really interested in testing about, is if the timer is reset or not. So that's the only thing that really returns something. And this is a Boolean function telling me that. So let's take a quick look at the model. So in this very simple model, what I'm going to have is the state of my system, so the state of the stopwatch, and each of these actions I describe. And in a general way, the model for Spec Explorer is a set of actions that usually take parameters, they can return values, and they interact with the state of the system. So usually they represent that something happened. Some interaction happened with respect to the current state that changed the state usually, and something is returned. So let's look at these three rules, right? We have three rules, one for each button. So the mode button rule is a rule that, well, first of all, it's always enabled, right? I can always push the mode button. And basically what it does is it changed the display timer variable from false to true, right? If I'm displaying the timer, then I'm not, and the other way around. The start and stop button, on the other hand, it's not always enabled. So the first thing you'll see here is that there is a condition. That's a precondition of the function. I can press this start and stop button only if I'm displaying the timer. If I'm in daytime mode, this button is not enabled. So I don't care about that path. I'm just going to model what are the actual actions that my system can perform. And well, this is pretty simple. If the timer is running, then I stop it, otherwise it's running. And if it's running and I stop it, that means that the timer is not frozen. The other action is also pretty straightforward. Again, the condition is that I must be displaying the timer to reset or lap the stopwatch. And the other condition is that the timer mode shouldn't be in reset mode, since I want to reset it. And finally, the observable behavior of this model is represented by this timer reset and just projects the timer mode variable that should be in reset mode. So this is a very, very simple system. These are the three actions I have. So now that I have formalized this behavior, I can explore it and I can generate these cases out of that. So the way this works in Spec Explorer is you build machines, and you can think of a machine of a way to crawl the state space of your system, right? The initial state is going to be the state that I declare in the model, the initial state, right? And after that, I can traverse each of the possible actions that are enabled, and that will change the state of my system. So a machine is kind of a device that will explore that state and will traverse all the possible states of the system. So here I have two machines declared. I have a model machine, and this machine represents everything that my system allows. So the way it looks like, it say, okay, I want to construct a model program from this config file. This config declares all the actions. So basically, this machine represents everything that my system allows. So let's go to the exploration manager. Here I can see all the machines that I have declared, and I can see the model machine here. So what I can do is say, okay, explore. So this is the result of the exploration, and let me change this so it looks better. Okay, so what it's showing here is the behavior of my system, how my model behaves. And this is automatically generated from this model I just showed. So this initial state, the one that is grayed out, is the starting point of my system. Each edge represents a way to transition from one state to the other. And if I have two different states, that means that the state of my system is different. So every time that I reach the same state using different paths, the tool automatically merge those states. So every time that I can reach the same state of the system in many different ways, I will have exactly the same state in this graph. So as you can see, if I start here, well, I'm in daytime mode and the timer is reset. Here I can push the mode button. So I will go to the timer mode and the timer will be reset. Then I can start the timer. So I will go to timer mode and the timer will be running. And here I can start and stop the button again. So I will get to timer, but the timer is stopped. So in this way, I will traverse all possible states of this system. So this looks nice, but maybe you're wondering where the test cases are. Well, that is another machine. And the idea is that once I have all the possible behaviors of my system, I can traverse that graph, and each traversal represents a test case, right? Because I will be driving my system through those steps, knowing which is the expected state at each state, and I can ask what's the state of my system given the observable functions I have. So here I have this other machine called the test suite machine. And the way I construct it here is saying, well, I want test cases from this other model. So again, I can go to the exploration manager and explore this machine. So the result of this is a set of branches that each of these represent a different test case. So now I can generate the test cases. And this generates code. And that means that it's once I have the code, that's independent of Spec Explorer. It's just code, right? And it looks like it's equivalent to writing that manually. So I can just take that code to somewhere else and execute that. And I don't really need this tool for doing that. Currently C Sharp. Yeah, in fact, there is a programmatic way to get the result of the exploration. So actually, you can take that graph and generate whatever you want. And the other thing I forgot to mention is that the model, this model in particular was C#, but you can use any .NET language.
Pure C language can support?
Well, not this. This runs on top of .NET. So if it's outside of .NET, that's not there. So let me show you. I just generated the test cases. So this generates MS test, which is something that Visual Studio also understands. So here I have all the test cases generated. So I can just click here and run them. So here I have this, this is the implementation running, right? That is this image flashing. So as you can see, this test passed and these three failed. So something went wrong with my implementation. So let's take a look. I can go here, implementation, and have a quick look. Oh, here it is. I have a bug here. And I hope it was so easy to find a bug. So I will just remove it. And I will run the tests again. So these are exactly the same test cases. I have already generated them. I'm just changing the way the implementation works. I'm not doing anything on the exploration side. Okay, so problem fixed. Now my implementation passed. And if you were wondering, well, I mean, given this exploration graph, what are the test cases? I mean, how we determine which are the test cases we generate? There are several strategies. The default one, that is the one that I'm using now, the set of test cases that are generated guarantees you that every possible transition is covered. So what we are doing here is transition coverage. Of course, if you want to test all the possible behaviors, that would be like an exponential explosion. So that's not a strategy that is usually available. It doesn't make sense for most of the systems. But there are others. If you are interested, I can go there and say more about that. I'm not going to go into those details now. Okay, so let's... any questions so far? I just wanted to show like a very high level overview of how the tool looks like. Yes, yeah, that's a very good question, and I'm going to show a second demo that is, and that's going to be a protocol that is asynchronous, so I'm going to get there. Yeah. Okay, so one thing that you can ask is, well, when should I use this, and when this really pays off? So, of course, one of the advantages is that once you formalize the model, you push a button and you get test cases, right? And you can get as many test cases as you want. Right. So if you want 10,000 test cases, well, they are there, right? It's just about generating them. Of course, you get this early detection of inconsistencies. By formalizing the model, it kind of forces you to go through that process where you look at your requirements carefully and analyze contradictions or subspecified stuff. And the other thing that is very nice is it has a very low cost on updates. So if in the future some of your implementation changes, if you wrote those cases manually, well, usually you need to go one by one and identifying which thing needs to be changed. Well, this is usually much easier because you go to the model and hopefully it's kind of easy to change the model. It's easier than changing all the test cases one by one. So you get to the model, you update your model, and you regenerate your test cases. So updates tend to be much easier to deal with. Of course, there is a downside. So it's not that this is always better. You need to do more work in advance. You need this kind of upfront investment in building your model. There is some mindset adjustment required. So if you already have a test team, well, they need to ramp up in model-based testing. They need to understand the concepts around that. And you might need to change some processes in the way your testing works. So the question here is, well, does MVD really pay off? And as you would imagine, I think that the answer is yes. Otherwise, I think I won't be here. And I think there is a very good example that is a very, very big project that Microsoft did, in which we need to document all Windows Server 2008 protocols. It was like a huge archaeology project within the compliance project. And that took 2,000 person years, so it was very, very big. And what we proved at the end is that the fact that we use model-based testing for testing the documentation of all these protocols gave us a 40% gain, that given the size of this project was a 50-person year of tester work. So it was really, really, a big save. So in case you don't believe me, that this is really useful to have a lot of internal and external adoptions of Spectre for both inside and outside Microsoft. So there are test cases being generated by Spec Explorer and running every day by these folks. And so, as I said before, it's not that MET always pays off. That depends really on the type of project you have. So we kind of identify kind of a checklist of things that are usually pointing to that direction. That is, since you have to do this upfront investment in building the model, this is not really convenient when your system is kind of simple, or the state is not so involved. So when you have a potentially infinite state, requirements can be covered in many different ways. You have a lot of parameters, the system is reactive or asynchronous or distributed. This is really when Spec Explorer starts to pay off. Because what happens is usually when testers write test cases, they have a model in their heads, right? They know how the system should behave, and they are trying to write test cases conforming to that. But it's like their own mind is acting as the oracle, right? So this is kind of formalizing that and writing down in a formal way how the system should behave. So if the system is complex enough, that really pays off. So let me show you another example, now in the protocol domain. This is a chat protocol. Of course, it's a very, very simplified version of a chat protocol. But it's interesting because it's asynchronous. A lot of things can happen at the same time in an undetermined order. So let me explain you a little bit how this works. The idea is that you have this chat room. You have a lot of users. Users can log on or log off from that chat room. Every user has an ID, and every time that some action happens, the server acts that. So I can say, hey, I'm user one, I want to log on to this chat room. And the server says, okay, now you're logged on. In the same way, I can log off. I can also request a list of users, so tell me which are all the lists that are currently logged on in this chat room, and I get the list. And of course, I can send messages. So every user can send a message, and this is kind of a broadcast way of sending a message. I send a message to the chat room, all the users get that message. And if several users send messages, well, the order in which that gets to the chat room is not determined. It can happen at any order. The only restriction, and that's something that we need to enforce, is that if I'm a user and I send multiple messages, other users need to get those messages in the same order, which makes sense for a chat, right? But that's the only order requirement. If several users are chatting at the same time, well, that's not clear. So let me... nice. I wanted to compete with Neil in terms of how many crashes I get. So let me load this other project I have here. Okay, so I have the chat project. And again, there are three pieces. There is the model that describes how the system behaves. There is implementation. And this core file that describes these machines and how they should explore the state space. Something that I didn't mention earlier is that for reasonably complex system, it's usually a recommendation that instead of your test cases driving your system directly, and this is not only that something that applies to model-based testing, I think it makes sense for testing in general, we developed an intermediate layer that we call the adapters, that is an abstraction of your system, so it only exposes the thing that you're really interested in testing, and maybe simplifies some initialization or parameter configuration. So really, the test cases we're going to generate here are going to drive the adapter, and the adapter is the one that's going to drive the real system. So if you see here, I have this adapter, and this is just like a high-level API that I can use for testing my system. And connected to the process changes that I mentioned before, the adapter layer, it's a very nice way to split your testing team. So one part of the team works on the modeling part, formalizing how the system should behave. And the other part of the team can work on the implementation of the adapters, which is like the interface for how the system should be driven. So once you agree on the adapter, which is usually a very good practice because you're kind of saying, okay, this is the way I'm going to interact with my system for testing, then you can work in parallel and you can get model and behavior in different ways. Okay, so let's take a quick look at this chat model. So let's start with the state of the model. So here I have, the user state can be four things. A user can be waiting for logon, can be actually logged on, waiting for a list request, or waiting for logoff. Those are the cases. A user is actually something that has the user state and a map that contains all the messages that are waiting to be delivered. Every entry of the map represents that a particular user has this list of messages that were sent to the user. So if you see here, I have this map container. This user sent this sequence of messages to this user class that are waiting to be delivered. And that's the state of my system. So the chat room is represented as a map that contains a user ID and a user, and that represents all the users that are currently logged on. So it's going to start empty, and as users log on, I'm going to start populating this map. So this is the state. I'm going to skip some of the details. So now I have the rules. So as you remember, I can log on, I can log off, I can request for a list, or I can broadcast a message. And since I want to test the server response, I have a pair of actions per one of these user actions. So I can a user can request to log on. So this is the logon request, and this represents the user ID that wants to log on. And then the server sends a response saying, okay, this is the act of the logon, saying, okay, so this user is not really not logged on. So let's take a quick look at the body of this action. Okay, so for a user to request a logon, I need, as a precondition, the user needs not to be logged on at that point. So what I'm checking here is that the map doesn't contain the user. So then I create the user, I set that to waiting for logon, and I initialize the map. When the server asks that, I say, okay, the server asks that if the user is in the map, because I already added that, and it needs to be waiting for logon. And if that's the case, well, I change the state to logged on. So in this way, you see how usually the rules, these parameters, they interact with the system, they change the system state, and they return some value. Logoff is similar, list is similar. Let's take a very quick look at the broadcast request and broadcast ACK. So again, when a user sends a message, the first thing we check is that the user is really logged on. And for each user that is in the chat room, we add this message in the queue. Right? when the server acknowledged the broadcast, then first I want to check that. So each of these parameters needs to be checked, and I'm checking that, well, the receiver actually has some pending message from the sender, and that the message that is pending is exactly the one that I'm getting in this parameter. So this is the model. There are some helpers that I'm going to skip. So let's take a look at how this can be explored now. So let's go to the code file. So I have my machines here. The first machine I have is exactly the one that I had for the stopwatch, and this is the model program. And again, this machine describes everything that my system allows as a valid behavior. So what do you think it will happen if I try to explore this machine? What's the main problem you see? In the stopwatch, this was a very simple system. It has only three variables for a state. So, and each of the variables, I think it was a Boolean or an enumeration. So when you explore that, what you get is finite. The number of different states that my system can be is a finite number of states. The problem here with the chat, right, is that the state now is a map, right? It can have any number of users. A user can do any number of actions. There is no limit. I can log on, log off, any number of files I want. So if I try to explore that, I will hit a bump, right? It's essentially infinite. So I won't bother exploring that machine. So I have this second machine that is a bounded version of that. And what I'm doing here is that the Spec Explorer has a way in which I can restrict the scope. So where is the interesting part start, right? Now I have like a more real system. I want to generate these cases. The state space is infinite. I need a way to say what I really want to test. So here is the first way of what we call slicing the test space. That is, I'm going to restrict the model, the model domain. So this machine, what it's doing is saying, okay, the logon request only can come from user number one. So from all the potential IDs that I can have, I will restrict that to just one, user number one. And from all the messages I can send, which are arbitrary strings, I will only send the message hi, right? So that's a machine. It's gonna, so this machine represents all the possible behaviors restricted to that domain. Only one user, user number one, and only one message, message hi. So what do you think it will happen? Do you think that now we have a finite system or not? Who votes for finite? Who votes for infinite? This is weird. There are a lot of people that don't have an opinion here. This is either one or the other, right? This is easy. Okay, so let's try to explore the machine. Let's try to find that out. So here I have my bound model program, and I'm going to explore it. So this can take a little bit more time. Now my system is more complex. And in fact, if you can see, well, I've already generated everything. Now I'm taking a lot of time for rendering that, which is a sign that the graph I have is pretty big. So as you can see, this is huge, right? It's not really for human consumption. So I will zoom out here. And the first thing you see is that you see these bounds in this orange color. That means that we hit a bound. That's something you can specify in that config file. But that means that we haven't really get all the possible states that were there. At some point, we just gave up. We say, these are too many. So what happened? It turned out, well, we still don't know if this is infinite or not, but at least it's very big. So if you think about it, the problem is that we restricted the domain, but we haven't restricted how these actions can happen across time. So even though I'm just user one, I can request for list, and then request it again, and then send message hi, and then send it again, and then log off, and then log on, right? So the number of interactions I can have, they're still infinite. So I will never get a complete exploration out of that. So we need additional ways to slice the type of test cases that we want. So let's go back to the court file and let's take a look at another machine I have here. And I have this one called logon off list scenario. And this looks much better in that respect. Here it's saying, okay, the first thing that's gonna happen is the user one is gonna ask for logon and the server is gonna respond back. And the first thing you may notice here is that logon response doesn't have a parameter. I can specify one, but I can also set that free, and that means that any parameter that the server responds is gonna be okay. I'm gonna accept any kind of logon responses from the server. So the user one logs on, same for two, same for three. Then one list request is gonna come. And again, I'm not specifying any of the parameters. That means that any of the three users can ask for a list request, but just one is gonna happen. Then the server is gonna act that, and then all the users are gonna log off, and notice the star here. That means I'm gonna have as many log off requests as I can, as my system allows. So this way of specifying machines, which we call scenarios, slicing scenarios, has this flavor of like a regular expression language in which you can say, okay, I'm expecting these actions, then as many of these as I can, also as my system allows, and then this other action, or this other action. So I can really build families of behaviors. And the nice thing is that then I can combine them with my model, so with all the possible behaviors. So if you look at this machine, this is kind of an abstract scenario, right? It's like a pattern of behavior. This other machine, logon off list slice, what's doing is, well, you can think of this this first machine as one model, right? You can think of the model program as the other model, and recall that the model program is infinite. And what I'm doing here is that I'm combining them with this operator. So I'm really merging the two models together. And the meaning of that is, well, the model program represents everything that can happen. This logon off list scenario represents this particular family of patterns. The combined result is anything that my system allows that follows that family of patterns. So let's look how this looks like. So I have this logon off list slice, so I'm going to explore it, and now this looks much better. So first I have this logon request from user one that was specified by the scenario, the app from the server, and of course, since my model was written that way, the only possible app that I can get is from user one. Right. Even though I left that parameter free. The same for two, the same for three. So now I have these three users logged on. And then the list requests start coming. And as you remember, I was only allowing one list request. Well, this diamond thing means that, well, any of these three things may happen. And that means that when I generate these cases out of this, I will allow any of these three things to happen. So either user one or two or three can ask for a list request. And the corresponding acts come from the server. These are the acts. So as you can see, the server is saying that one, two, three are the users that are logged on at that moment. And then the log off requests arrive. And again, this can happen at any order, because if you remember the scenario we wrote, we were saying, okay, let's have all the log off response, the log off requests that I can have, and I was not specifying any order, and I was not specifying any users. So this funky diagram represents all the possible ways in which users can ask for log off requests. This is cool, right? This is nice. Okay, so that's one of the machines. Let's explore at least one more. Here I have another example. So this example represents that two users log on, one and two, and then one user, user number one, sends 1A and then sends 1B. And this machine is meant for testing that whenever the same user sends messages, the other users get that messages in the same order. That's why they're called ordered scenarios. The other machines represent the unordered scenario, that is, I have two users. First user sends a one, second user sends a two, but my system allows that to get in any order, right? So I have these two machines, and then what I can have is, well, a machine that combines all these behaviors. So I have this machine that first, well, they start the server, they connect to the server, these are things that I, more initialization actions. And then either I can have the log on off scenario, or the broadcast order scenario, or the broadcast unordered scenario. So now I have these three different ways of exploring my model that represents like different family of behaviors in the same test suite. So we can try to explore that and see how it looks like. So I have these combined slices. I can explore them. And I get this diagram. And as you can see, this part is the first machine that we saw, the one that has three users and this request and then the log off. And the other parts of the diagrams are these other two things that I added. And now I have everything together in the same graph. So with these regular expression operators, you can combine all your machines in many different ways to represent different families of behavior that you're interested in testing. So after you have your machine, you can generate test cases out of that. And again, a test case is just one branch, one exploration branch on a given graph. So I have this test suite machine that says, well, I want to construct test cases from combined slices. And combined slices is the one I just showed. So let's explore that. And I got a bunch of test cases. They look similar to the ones for the stopwatch. The main difference, as you can see, is that in the stopwatch, all the test cases were like single branches, right? That was mainly because my system was deterministic, right? Every time that something happened, I knew what was the state after that. Now the difference is that I have responses from the server, and that's undeterministic. There are some behaviors that don't have like a specific sequence. So that is modeled as these diamonds, which means, well, once I reach the state, this state, well, there are several things that can happen, and my test case needs to consider them because all those branches are possible outcomes from my system. So if my system decides to respond something and my test case doesn't allow that, it's going to fail, and I don't want that to happen. If that was an undeterministic but valid behavior of my system, I want my test case to consider that. So again, I have 1 minute left. So I will just show you how. So I just generated these test cases. Let's refresh this just in case. So now I'm going to go to my test view, and I can run them. So these pops-ups that you see are the actual implementation. So a TCP connection is being established, messages are being sent through that socket, and the results are tested against the Oracle. I think I just selected the first one. Oh, that's it. So all the test cases you saw are being run now, and are being matched again the result of the implementation. I think I have no bugs here, not that I know. So all the test cases passed.
Excuse me, how do you link this to the code?
Yeah. So if you look at the code file, what I'm saying here is that, well, all the actions that are defined in these chat adapters are the actions that I'm going to explore. So if I just add the adapter as part of my project in Visual Studio, that's it. Exactly. Okay, so I think that was everything I wanted to show. So, any questions?
And how do you test the UI projects
in this? Oh, that's a very interesting question. No, in fact, I do know cases where that was done. And usually you do it in a programmatic way, right? So you have some, again, you define your adapter, the adapter drives your UI. Right.
Right, but the feedback whether the UI is correct or not, that only visually we can see, right? Or do you have something which does that also?
Well, again, I mean, you can have your system running, and that can allow user interaction, and as long as you have some API that knows what happened on the user side, you can map that back to this. That, again, I mean, the test cases are generated offline.
Test cases is generated offline, you can execute them automatically.
Yeah.
But whether they passed or failed, that only a tester who sees the output in the visually can decide. So do we account for that here?
Oh, well, that's the thing, that if you can only decide if the test case passed or failed visually, then there is no way you can hook this up. You need to programmatically retrieve that and make a function out of that. So you need to expose that as part of some API that we can connect with this. But I think it's a very good point. I don't think it's specifically connected with model-based testing. It's just a general testing problem and how you test UI. Yeah.
You have mentioned that 40% gain to adapting the testing model, but I would like to know the size and if possible, the 40% gain based on how many projects?
This was just for this particular project that we did. That was a very large project. So involved more than, I don't know, maybe Neil or other guys have more information. I think it involved more than, it was hundreds of protocols. So thousands of bugs were found out of that. And involved a lot of people. But this project was kind of big enough, so the 40% gain was statistically significant, right? And in fact, I can give you the reference. There is a paper out of that in which Microsoft Research verified the significance of that data.
Our question is, what is the percentage of modeling in the developing cycle?
You mean the part for
percentage of duration,
it's, of effort spent on modeling.
Yeah, well, it's. I think it's hard to tell. That depends on the project. I can show you. So the second bar represents the model-based testing approach, and of course, the modeling part is not in the traditional one, and that's the thing you need to pay. That's the price to pay. The nice thing is that after you model that, the coding and running, that's something that exists in the first bar, but in the other one it's just running test cases, so you just generate them. How much of this modeling, in terms of numbers, that represents, I can't answer that. I think it really depends on your project.
Are there plans to do this for C or C++ based projects, or are you going to stick to managed projects?
So for now, we don't have any support for things outside .NET. Being able to export this to other types of platforms is something that we have in our roadmap. I don't have an ETA for that. I think that the closest we have now is this way in which you can consume the output of the exploration and generate whatever thing you want. In fact, if you install a tool, and I forgot to show the last slide, here's where you can download it and where you can find some documentation. If you install the tool, there is an example of that in which we generate an Excel spreadsheet out of the exploration graph. So that's kind of the extension part.
But that you have to use it for manual testing. I mean, you write the code for. You don't generate the test cases, and you need to.
It's like you have the test cases in this graph format, and you decide what you want to output from there. More questions? Okay, thank you.